Hey, Truth Seekers, Mike Malloy here on Nova M Radio. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks to Harrison on the Edge last night from Los Angeles who filled in for me. When you have a four-year-old, you are always prone to all sorts of viral and bacteriological attacks. And Molly brought home a doozy this time. Still feel like hell, but, you know, this is talk radio. It's not house construction. So here we are tonight. I did spend an awful lot of time yesterday and today not just drinking green tea and taking vitamin C and zinc, but also watching an awful lot of news coverage on television. I know. And doing an awful lot of reading, articles on the web, some of them retrospectives of what the Bush crime family has done. And, of course, it occurred to me all fresh and new, as though I needed this, just how the Republicans have destroyed this country. I mean, it's a mess. I watched the press briefing today with Barack Obama, and I listened to him as he answered the questions. And I know he realizes, as do his advisors, what he's facing, not just on the economic scene, but also just about every single issue that government can or should be involved in. Every single aspect of this country has been beaten into bloody pieces by the Republicans and by the Bush crime family. It's astonishing. They bankrupted the country. They destroyed the reputation of this guy. I mean, you know all this. I'm not going to go down the list again. But it occurred to me today how, you know, why have I been so pissed off the past at least 6 years? I mean, it's irrational to be that pissed off, to be that angry, to just walk around feeling enraged most of the time. And I guess I've said this before on the air. Maybe it's because of the work I do. I have to immerse myself in this garbage. But even so, I know a lot of people who are not in talk radio. I get your emails who are equally as furious. And, of course, the answer to that anger and that rage, as a matter of fact, I even used it as a show topping one time about 8-9 months ago. You know, just tired of being enraged, tired of it. And, of course, the answer is crystal clear, because we have been forced by the nature of our system and the fact that none of us have wanted to take up arms and go to the streets. We've been forced to watch while the Republican Party, who had all the power, everything, they were able to ram through every single agenda that they ever wanted to ram through. They were able to demonstrate for the entire country. That's why I don't understand McCain getting 130 electoral votes. How could that happen? After all this time that the Republicans have demonstrated how not only are they incapable of leading, but the only interest they have is the corporate interests, this fascistic religious interest. Surely to God, there are not 40 million people in this country, that's the number that voted for McCain, who feel the same way. There couldn't be. There couldn't be that many people who want to see the environment destroyed, the economy destroyed, our military destroyed, our reputation destroyed, freedom, liberty, the Constitution, all of it destroyed, beaten into bloody little chunks and flushed down the toilet. There couldn't be, could there? The only other alternative, if the answer to that is no, is that we are so grossly stupid in this country, just beyond belief. I hope it's going to change. Barack Obama is not a liberal. He's not the savior. He's progressive on some issues. I'm going to support him as much as I can, although I look at Rahm Emanuel and Robert Rubin and Paul Volcker and, oh, my God, I look at the people that showed up at that press briefing today and I just get, you know, fingers of ice running up down my spine. But I'm not ready to go, oh, God, no. Even in a cannibalistic society like this one, we usually give our incipient chief executives a little bit of time, right? Except in the case of Bush. I mean, everyone knew that, should have known, that Bush was a jackass and an idiot and a failure, as well as being a very, very stupid little man, just like the same could apply to Sarah Palin, except for the little man part. But what a mess they've got us into. It's astonishing. I need to vent and get this out as quickly as I can, because I am sick of feeling angry. I'm sick of realizing what these bastards have done to my country. And I'm not talking about their criminal acts. I'm talking about their political acts. The criminal acts, that's a whole different area. They will probably walk away from their crimes. They really probably will. That's just the nature of the political beast inside whose belly we all exist. I wish it weren't that way, but in my lifetime now, I've seen so many criminals walk away. The Watergate criminal, a couple of them got nailed. The Iran-Contra criminals, with one or two exceptions, the SNL criminals. You see this all the time. The criminals get away with it. The upper level of criminality. If I go hold up a 7-Eleven, I'm going to prison for probably 10 or 15 years. So are you. If you get caught with a couple of pounds of reefer in your car, you're going to jail. You got a family? Too bad. You're going to jail. These sons of bitches in the Republican Party, who convinced America to give them the keys to everything, and Americans, being the stupid, ill-informed people that we are, we gave them the keys. Starting in 94, we gave them everything. And look what they've done. Look what they've done. I am still waiting for that Republican who has the guts to call my program. I think every Republican, I've said this before, every Republican is a coward and brain dead and a liar and a sneak and immoral and unethical. And I realize that's a hell of a tirade to lay out there and then say I'm waiting for one Republican to call in and justify what you rat bastards have done. Or just point out one thing that you've done in the past 16 years that has benefited the country as a whole. One thing. That's all I've asked. I've been asking that for 7 years. One single thing that you scum, your party, has done, your leadership, to make this country better for all Americans. One stinking thing. And I've never gotten that call. And I've never gotten the email. Oh, I get the emails. The emails call me a son of a bitch. And I mean, names I can't say on the air. But that I laugh at that garbage. As a matter of fact, we use it for comedy. But I'm serious. I've never gotten a phone call or an email where anyone of the Republican or the conservative persuasion has ever presented one example, one incident, one piece of legislation, one anything that benefited this country. So, being sick of being angry and enraged, I am hoping that the Republican Party that we're witnessing now, the death of the Republican Party, it deserves to die. It deserves to decay and rot and use it as, I don't know, compost someplace. Let the current Democratic Party become the new conservative party. That would be fair. The current Democratic Party is mucho conservative. They have a couple of progressive ideas. They're not Republicans. That's for damn sure. But let the current Democratic Party become America's new conservative party, and then build a liberal party. Let's just call it. God damn it. Let's just call it the Liberal Party, and see if we can do this. See if we can build a liberal party that has liberal representatives, liberal senators, liberal governors, and maybe eventually a liberal president. We have not had a liberal president in 80 years. And I mentioned this the other night. I don't know that the liberalism is still an operating political idea. Maybe it's not. Maybe we are not that it's failed. Liberalism has always succeeded. But because things have become so enormous, we have got to get post-political, post-liberalism. conservatism is a dead, rotting corpse. But Democrats now. I'm mixing up terms. I'm sorry. The Democratic Party needs to go ahead and become the new conservative party if we need that. And there should be a liberal party. But I'm beginning to wonder if there is any room left any longer in terms of utter survival. Can you imagine 10 people on an island someplace stuck and they got to survive? And, I mean, all kinds of things are ready to beset them. Maybe the island's going to catch on fire. Maybe a tsunami. Maybe there's no food. Whatever. But they've got to figure out a way to survive. I don't believe that six of them are going to say, well, we believe in a conservative approach here. And four of them are going to say, well, we believe in a liberal approach here. And they're going to break off into factions? No, I don't think so. I think what's going to happen is the 10 of them will sit down and say, Jesus Christ, we better do something fast or we're all going to die. And maybe that's where we are in the political system, and not just this country, but globally. Maybe the idea of political parties, which the framers warned us against, the framers told us never, never, don't do it. Don't get into political parties. Maybe that time has come. But the idea of liberalism, maybe its days are over. I don't know. Maybe somebody smarter than me will come up with an answer to that. Where's Tom Hartman? I wish you would. It takes a whole lot of loving to make me feel good.
Neocons, don't be afraid. Be very afraid. It's more Mike Malloy.
22 past the hour from our economic correspondent. What the hell, we might as well do it. It's our Friday gloom and doom report from Prairie 2. He writes, "Hey Mike, even with today's bounce, the Dow has dropped 700 points since Tuesday with the report of a sharp drop in factory orders and retail sales to the lowest in 40 years, even with the Palin shopping spree. A truly grim jobs report came out today, also with 250,000 jobs lost, with no allowance for 120,000 jobs needed for the growing population. Labor experts say employment trends indicate the job losses will exceed 300,000 per month in the next few months. Overseas markets continue to be down sharply, and the Bank of England has cut its interest rate cut its rate 1.5% after sharp drops in the rate of inflation in Europe and rising unemployment. India is trying to deal with a sharp rise in the suicides among farmers and investors and stockbrokers. Worldwide commodity prices, including oil and gold, are in decline and are predicted to continue falling as demand continues down. Inventory piling up is sparking fears of a deflation panic, as companies would be forced to sell at any price, and finding no buyers, this would trigger a complete collapse. The fact that gold is dropping, even with all the widespread economic fears, is the most troubling indicator of deflation. Deflation isn't the disease, but rather it indicates the patient is nearly dead. At home, the president-elect picked Mr. DLC himself, Rahm Emanuel, to be White House Chief of Staff. Emanuel, who was a constant thorn for Hillary during the Clinton administration, is certainly qualified and has a reputation for knocking heads to get things done. This is either a shrewd move for Obama, who will need to act decisively, or it signals the ascendancy of corporate power and we're all screwed. Obama got an in-depth briefing from his economic transition team that includes people from the Clinton White House who were opposed to NAFTA. And then Obama held his first press conference, and surprisingly, in light of all the information handed him, he didn't ask for the votes to be recounted. From Prairie 2. Oh, it's just god-awful. I'm just hoping that we don't have an option here of sliding from the collective rage that we all feel over what the Republicans have done into some form of ennui or angst or whatever the hell the word du jour is that would indicate that we don't know what to do. Now, I can remember the early 80s when Reagan took over and the double-digit interest rates, double-digit in unemployment, inflation was out of control, all the terrible, terrible things that happened. The 70s, during the Nixon, Ford, and Carter years, we had a real bad patch back then. There was a difference back then, I think. And that is the fact that we were not involved in any overt, massively funded wars. I don't know. It's difficult to remember sometimes. It really is. Too much reefer, too many years. I don't know what it is. But it's difficult to remember all that, except I remember it was pretty scary. I spent a lot of that period of time going to school because I couldn't find a job until, well, CNN in 83, but right around that time, it was just extremely difficult for anyone to find a job. But what we're faced with here almost makes that look like beanbag. I mean, this is going to be a rough ride. And I keep looking at Obama when he comes out to give make an appearance, give a speech, whatever, to see if his hair is gray yet. I mean, I know it's only been 3 days since he's been declared the president-elect. But you watch. You watch how quickly this man's hair goes gray. He's got a stunning array of problems facing him. And again, this is why I am just so furious with Republicans and the Bush crime family. They really hate America. They've tried to destroy it. And I'll tell you, I will kill myself before I would ever vote for a Republican. Probably before I ever even talk to one, you rat bastards. I'm tall, shattered and tossed and worn. I'm shocking to see. Too shocking to see. Trouble. I have paid my debt, now won't you leave me in my misery?
Ooh, I had a hammer in the morning, a hammer in the evening, all over this land, a hammer out of danger, a hammer.
And now the man conservatives love to hate, it's Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. One more mention right now about Rahm Emanuel. I have a lot to say about this guy, but maybe a little in the program, later in the program, or maybe Monday, because we have an Uncle Mike story corner coming. But just a little oddity. In Hebrew, the word Rahm means thunder. And in Hebrew, Barak means lightning. Well, it's time once again for Uncle Mike's Story Corner. It's a good night for it. It's raining here in Georgia. It's snowing in other parts of the country. So gather around. I hope you have your snugglies on. Got some popcorn? Oh, music stops very quickly now. Uncle Mike's Story Corner. And tonight, the writer is Bill Ayers. Can you say terrorist? Phew, what was all that mess? I'm still in a daze, sorting it all out, decompressing. Passed the vitamin C. For the past few years, I've gone about my business, hanging out with my kids and now my grandchildren, taking care of our elders. They moved in as the kids moved out. Going to work, teaching and writing, and every day I participate in the never-ending effort to build a powerful and irresistible movement for peace and social justice. In years past, I would now and then, often unpredictably, appear in the newspapers or on television, sometimes with a reference to Fugitive Days, my 2001 memoir of the exhilarating and difficult years of resistance against the American war in Vietnam. It was a time when the world was in flames, revolution was in the air, and the serial assassinations of black leaders disrupted our utopian dreams. These media episodes of fleeting notoriety always led to some extravagant and fantastic assertion about what I did, what I might have said, and what I probably believe now. It was always a bit surreal. Then came this political season. During the primary, the blogosphere was full of chatter about my relationship with President-elect Barack Obama. We had served together on the board of the Woods Foundation and knew one another as neighbors in Chicago's Hyde Park. In 1996, at a coffee gathering that my wife, Bernadine Dorn, and I held for him, I made a $200 donation to his campaign for the Illinois State Senate. Obama's political rivals and enemies thought they saw an opportunity to deepen a dishonest perception that he is somehow un-American, alien, linked to radical ideas, a closet terrorist who sympathizes with extremism, and they pounced. Senator Hillary Clinton's campaign provided the script, which included guilt by association, demonization of people Obama knew or might have known, creepy questions about his background, and dark hints about hidden secrets yet to be uncovered. On March 13th, Senator McCain, apparently in an attempt to reassure the base, sat down for an interview with Sean Hannity of Fox News. McCain was not yet aware of the narrative Hannity had been spinning for months, and so Hannity filled him in. "Ayers is an unrepentant terrorist," he explained. He said, quote, "On 9/11 of all days, he had an article where he bragged about bombing our Pentagon, bombing the Capitol, and bombing New York City police headquarters. And he added, I regret not doing more," end quote. McCain couldn't believe it. Neither could I. On the campaign trail, McCain immediately got on message. I became a prop, a cartoon character created to be pummeled. When Alaska Governor Sarah Palin got hold of it, the attack went viral. At a now-famous October 4th rally, she said Obama was palling around with terrorists. I pictured us sharing a milkshake with two straws. The crowd began chanting, "Kill him! Kill him!" It was downhill from there. My voicemail filled up with hate messages. They were mostly from men, all venting and sweating and breathing heavily. A few threats, "Watch out," and "You deserve to be shot." And some emails like this one I got from Satan@hell.com, quote, "I'm coming to get you, and when I do, I'll waterboard you," end quote. The police lieutenant who came to copy down those threats deadpanned that he hoped the guy who was going to shoot me got there before the guy who was going to waterboard me, since it would be most foul to be tortured and then shot. The cop and I have been pals ever since he was first assigned to investigate threats made against me in 1987. After I was hired as an assistant professor at the University of Illinois at Chicago. The good news was that every time McCain or Palin mentioned my name, they lost a point or two in the polls. The cartoon invented to hurt Obama was now poking holes in the rapidly sinking McCain-Palin ship. It was inevitable. McCain would bet the house on a dishonest and largely discredited version of the 60s, which was the defining decade for him. He built his political career on being a prisoner of war in Vietnam. The 60s, as myth and symbol, is much abused. The downfall of civilization in one account, a time of defeat and humiliation in a second account, and the perfect moment of righteous opposition, peace and love in a third. The idea that the 2008 election may be the last time in American political life that the 60s plays any role whatsoever is a mixed blessing. On the one hand, let's get over the nostalgia and move on. On the other, the lessons we might have learned from the Black Freedom Movement and from the resistance against the Vietnam War have never been learned. To achieve this would require that we face history fully and honestly, something this nation has never done. The war in Vietnam was an illegal invasion and occupation, much of it conducted as a war of terror against the civilian population. The U.S. military killed millions of Vietnamese in air raids like the one conducted by McCain, and entire areas of the country were designated free fire zones where American pilots indiscriminately dropped surplus ordnance, an immoral enterprise by any measure. McCain and Palin Or as our late friend Studs Terkel put it regarding Palin, Joe McCarthy, and drag, they would like to bury the 60s. The 60s, after all, was a time of rejecting obedience and conformity in favor of initiative and courage. The 60s pushed us to a deeper appreciation of the humanity of every human being, and that is the threat it poses to the right wing, hence the attacks and all the guilt by association. McCain and Palin demanded to know the full extent of the Obama heirs' relationship so that they can know if Obama, as Palin put it, is telling the truth to the American people or not. This is just plain stupid. Obama has continually been asked to defend something that ought to be a democracy's heart, the importance of talking to as many people as possible in this complicated and wildly diverse society, of listening with the possibility of learning something new, and of speaking with the possibility of persuading or influencing others. Maybe we could welcome our current situation, torn by another illegal war as it was in the 60s, as an opportunity to search for the new. Perhaps we might think of ourselves not as passive consumers of politics, but as fully mobilized political actors. Perhaps we might think of our various efforts now, as we did then, as more than a single campaign, but rather as our movement in the making. We might find hope in the growth of opposition to war and occupation worldwide, or we might be inspired by the growing movements for reparations and prison abolition, or the rising immigrant rights movement and the stirrings of working people everywhere, or by gay and lesbian and transgender people courageously pressing for full recognition. Yet hope, my hope, our hope, resides in a simple, self-evident truth. The future is unknown and is also entirely unknowable. History is always in the making. It's up to us. It's up to you, and it's up to me. Nothing is predetermined. That makes our moment on this earth both hopeful and all the more urgent. We must find ways to become real actors, to become authentic subjects in our own history. We may not be able to will a movement into being, but neither can we sit idly by for a movement to spring full-grown as from the head of Zeus. We have to agitate for democracy and egalitarianism, press harder for human rights, learn to build a new society through our self-transformations and our limited everyday struggles. At the turn of the last century, Eugene Debs, the great Socialist Party leader from Terre Haute, Indiana, told a group of workers in Chicago, quote, "If I could lead you into the promised land, I would not do it, because someone else would come along and lead you out," end quote. In this time of new beginnings and rising expectations, it is even more urgent that we figure out how to become the people we have been waiting to be. Uncle Mike's Story Corner. Bill Ayers is our writer tonight. He's a distinguished professor of education and senior university scholar at the University of Illinois at Chicago. He's also the author of Fugitive Days and co-author with Bernadine Dorn of Race Course, Against White Supremacy. All right, we have a break coming up here in just a moment, so we have a few more topics I'd like to toss into the mix tonight. We are going to make a supreme effort to get to phone calls tonight, but in the meantime, you might as well just wait. All right? Just kick back and eat the popcorn and wait to see if I go into a coughing spasm. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
That I must do the thing I think I cannot do. That you do what's right by your heart and soul. It's the imperfection. Make us whole. One life can tell the tale. And if you make the effort, you cannot fail. By your life you tell me it can be done. By your life's the courage to carry on. Here
liberal helping of truth? It's more of Mike Malloy.
Before the hour, one of the things I tried to do over the past 24 hours is take a look at, while I was out with this damn head cold, was take a look at all these emails that continue to come in about Prop 8 in California. It is as astonishing to me as it is to the people who wrote in. This, of course, is an issue that I'm once removed from, not being gay, as the racial issues I've always been removed from, being white, and the gender issues I've always been removed from, being male. I apologize. I'm a heterosexual white white male in a murderously heterosexual white male-dominated society. Jesus Christ, somebody give me the gun. I'll pull the trigger now. On the other hand, being the empathetic dude that I am, it is not difficult to feel some of what a lot of folks have attempted to write to me about in the emails about gay rights or African American rights or you know whatever. The emotion that is in these emails. And I literally have gotten scores of them. It's incredible to me. And so many people who have written have said, you know, you, Malloy, are the only one who's taken that position, or you're the only one that where I heard about the Christian Reconstruction movement behind this in the Mormon Church. Really? I don't understand why. I mean, the information, Jesus God, if I can get it, anybody can get it. You know, we have a research department here of one. So that's rather surprising. But anyway, again, there is no way. I thank you for these emails. I wish I could read every one of them on the air, but it would take a week. I swear to God it would. There's so many that came in here. I may filter in one or two tonight. Here's one from Scott who writes, Mike, I keep hearing the same old, tired, worn-out arguments over the gay marriage issue. To me, it boils down to one simple, easy-to-understand question. Who issues the damn license? It sure as hell isn't the church, it is the state. So if the state issues the license, then the state can issue one to whomever it wishes. And by the religious fanatic's own Bible, the church has no damn business involving itself in the issue. Render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's. That's pretty simple. If you believe in Jesus, he himself said, quote, the whole of the law can be summed up thusly. You must have no other God than the one true God and love your neighbor as yourself. And the greatest of these is love. What else needs to be said, Scott? This one is about Prop 8, but Kay in San Francisco writes, Mike, I'm sure you're sick of reading, emails about Prop 8, but I do want to share something hopeful. I teach at a Catholic high school, and the reaction of my students to the passage of Prop 8 was outrage and sadness. We had long discussions about it today within the context of U.S. history and civil rights. These kids clearly get it. They see it as a human rights issue. Even the ones who are from conservative families understand that marriage is a contract under the state and that the religious component of it is completely separate. Well, I certainly hope that the lawsuits which have been filed will do something to rectify the Prop 8 injustice quickly. I think it's safe to say that as this younger generation comes of age, gay marriage will be accepted to the point where it is no longer an issue. Much as interracial marriage ceased to be a hot-button issue around the time that I came of age. Okay. Yeah, and what you know what flew right beneath my radar? There was a ballot initiative in Arizona that was as vicious as the one in California. There were several ballot initiatives around the country where people actually had a chance to vote to deny civil rights or human rights to their fellow citizens. God damn. I mean, to me, that is just an outrage. What is wrong with you people? I mean, really, you sick idiots who voted to deny people the right to get married. What the hell is wrong with you? It's just astonishing to me. And I mentioned the other night that this is what this is the evil of direct democracy. This is why we live in a republic. A republic says, yeah, a majority rules, but the rights of the minority have to be protected, have to be respected. And what these religious sons of bitches are doing, and they are that. They are religious and they are sons of bitches, every single one of them. They're not spiritual. They're not following the teachings of Jesus. You know, I wish Jesus could pop up and say, you know what, my 12 disciples, four of them were gay, you dumbasses. Don't you realize that? But, of course, that'll never happen unless somebody can channel Jesus. But these religious crazy people who are doing this, after all the efforts to make sure that direct democracy would not be our system of government because it is so easy to corrupt, you know, why don't we decide that, let's pick a minority and decide that they don't deserve citizenship and then vote on it. God damn, I'm sure that would work. We could come up with something, right? And it's another reason why the framers were so intent on keeping that wall of separation between church and state, because they understood. They had European history as a model. They understood how murderous, how violent, how sick, how degenerate, and how immoral religion can be. Welcome back, 7 past the hour. Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Now, I've heard a little bit of comment about this here and there. After having spent the past 36 hours pretty much in a prone position with the computer on my lap and the television going in the background, I've heard a little bit of like noises in the bushes about getting the Democratic Party kicking Joe Lieberman's ass right out of the party. And I don't know why there's a debate here. I heard somebody say today on one of the news programs, well, it's because they like him. You know, the Democrats like him. He's a likable guy. He's a goddamn traitor. He's a punk. He ought to be thrown out. He's a Republican. Get him out. The people of Connecticut got rid of him in a primary. What was it, in 06? Was it 06? So he ran as an independent, and all the Republicans voted for him and trashed their Republican candidate. Whatever happened to him, he just disappeared in a tidal wave of ugliness from Republicans who only 6 years previous had referred to him as sore loser man. Republicans are scum. They really are. They look at self-governance as a game. Screw them. But anyway, Lieberman. Politico.com is saying that Democratic leaders are speculating whether Barack Obama can save Lieberman's job as chairman of the Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee. Lieberman, I guess part of the history of Barack Obama's being elected to the Senate was the fact that Lieberman showed him some attention early on when Barack Obama first got there, tried to mentor him or whatever. But that was then. This is now. Lieberman's a Republican, and he should be thrown not just off the committee, the chairmanship, but he should be told by Harry Reid, or I don't know, some Democrat who has the nerve to tell him, get the goddamn hell out of our party. You don't belong here. You never have. You never have. Get out of here. Get out of town. Apparently, Lieberman was told by Harry Reid, the Senate Majority Leader, that Lieberman, is going to lose his chairmanship because rank-and-file Senate Democrats are furious over his support for McCain, and including that speech on McCain's behalf at the Republican National Convention. I mean, what is up with this, right? And it wasn't just McCain. Lieberman was working down ticket for an awful lot of Republicans. Joe, take your bony ass out of my party, okay? Just go away. Just go away. You don't belong here. Now the speculation is that Obama could save Lieberman's ass by issuing a statement saying that he, Obama, forgives Joe and that everyone needs to work together for the good of the country. I really hope, I hope Barack Obama doesn't believe that everyone needs to or will work for the good of the country. Barack Obama is not inexperienced. He's not a naif. He, you know, a lot of people try to paint him as inexperienced. No, he's not. He understands things. But surely he doesn't think that incorporating Republicans or faux Democrats like Lieberman is for the good of the country. Sorry, I disagree with you on that one, Mr. President-elect, completely. So, today, this twisted little pretzel had a news conference, or yesterday. It looks, and from the news conference, it looks like the Jomentum train has come to a screeching halt with the Obama victory, unless Barack Obama steps in. So anyway, Holy Joe had his little press briefing, begging not for forgiveness for going all Zell Miller on the Democrats and backing McCain, but begging for mercy and hoping I just don't want to lose the chairmanship of the Homeland Security Committee. Oh my God, you know, Hadassah would just be so pissed off.
Senator Reid and I have just completed what I would describe as a very good conversation between two colleagues and friends. I want to spend some time in the next few days thinking about what Senator Reid and I discussed and what my options are at this point. And he promised me that he would do the same, and we will continue these conversations. But more broadly, let me just say a few words. As you all know, the people of Connecticut were good enough to re-elect me to the United States Senate in 2006 as an independent.
Right.
And so I have tried since then to view the decisions that I make here in the Senate not through a partisan lens, but rather from the perspective of what I believe is right and best for my country and my state. We have just finished an historic election. As you know, I decided in that election that partisanship should take a back seat to doing what, in this case, I believed was best for our country.
God.
But the election is over.
Yeah.
And I completely agree with President-elect Obama.
Uh-huh.
That we must now unite to get our economy going again and to keep the American people safe.
Yeah.
That is exactly what I intend to do with my colleagues here in the Senate in support of our new president. And those are the standards I will use in considering the options that I have before me.
Yeah, what are your options? Flogging? Waterboarding? You rat bastard. You really are. You slimy, slimy rat bastard. Oh, my God. You decided to view the decisions not through a partisan lens? Mr. Got your ass kicked in Connecticut, Lieberman. What? Every decision you've made has been through a partisan lens, the Republican partisan lens. And you say that you decided in this election that partisanship should take a back seat? What? Then why didn't you keep your goddamn mouth shut? And now we're supposed to believe this. We're supposed to say, oh, well, all that stuff I heard from Lieberman, like Jiminy Cricket sitting on McCain's shoulder. Well, no, it's not the Shia and the Sunni. Well, no, they're not sitting. Well, no, it's actually over here. Well, here, go back and say. All of that was trying to be nonpartisan? You're kidding. It sure looked partisan to me. It really did. But the election is over, he says, and I completely agree with President-elect Obama. You do? Well, guess what, meathead? Let's hope that President Obama doesn't agree with you. You're a turncoat, you're a sneak, you're a liar, and you're a creep, frankly. Support your new president. Why support him now? Look, the Republicans will find you a hole that you can reside in until you decide to retire and collect your money. But in the meantime, please, will somebody please tell Holy Joe to get out of town where it concerns the Democratic Party. Just go away. You and Zell Miller. Zell's not in the Senate anymore. Is he? No, he's gone. But why don't you and Zell, I don't know, open up a halfway house for insane Democrats. People who used to be Democrats and for some reason went bonkers. That might be a good idea, huh, Joe? Oh, God, this guy Malloy is going after me again. Hadassah, what am I going to do with this schmuck? Oh, yeah, yeah. I try to be independent. I try to look at things impartial. What is this? Is this Friday night? Oh, thank God.
Together, all these melodies, melodies, melodies. I don't want to sing it all. I don't want to be like you anymore. I don't want to see your face at my
free zone.
21 past the hour. I don't know if the truth will ever come out about the corruption, the filth of the Bush crime family and the people who really, really have no respect whatsoever for the United States, people like Karl Rove. Rolling Stone in the current issue. That's what this is from. Shortly after the attacks of September 11, Karl Rove informed a meeting of the Republican National Committee that he fully intended to make the war on terror a partisan issue, charging that the Democrats could not be trusted to keep the nation safe. Huh? Now, compare that. That's in the current issue of Rolling Stone. Compare Karl Rove saying that to some of the garbage that came out of the hoe from Wasilla and the old pimp's mouth during this this campaign. The after effects, the filthy taste, the ring around the toilet that Karl Rove is going to leave on the political scene is so much worse than his teacher Lee Atwater. It is so much worse. Rolling Stone goes on, the White House's thorough politicization of a war crisis without parallel in American history would continue over the weeks and months to come, from Republican campaign ads to sudden announcements of elevated terror alerts by Homeland Security, seemingly whenever the president's poll ratings began to dip. Remember that? Remember that? Remember the color-coded warnings? What the hell happened to that, huh? Remember the red and the orange and the yellow and the green? All that garbage? Do you remember what these sons of bitches have done to this country over the past 8 years? Remember? Do you remember? Of course you do. Rolling Stone goes on, in the midterm elections of 2002, barely a year after September 11th, public anxieties helped the Republicans win back the Senate and expand their majority in the House by 8 seats. How did they do that? The pig bastards did it by their little color-coded terror alerts. And ooh, ooh, watch out, watch out. Karl Rove. This is a guy who really should be taken out and stoned. I mean, he really should be, just, you know, as it says in Leviticus, right? Come on, you Republican religious freaks. Drag him to the public square and stone him to death. That's what your book of Leviticus demands for what he has done. Oh, you're going to reserve that for the queers. All right, what if Karl Rove is queer? Would that work for you, huh? You sick bastards. Anyway, Rolling Stone goes on, the decision to politicize the threat of terrorism led directly to a politicized war. By the time the long-expected American invasion of Iraq finally came in 2003, a large majority of Americans believed that Saddam Hussein's dictatorship possessed weapons of mass destruction. Most Americans favored military action, even if the United Nations refused to go along. The press, primed by carefully orchestrated leaks, lined up behind the administration, and even outlets that criticized Bush's tactics as overly hasty, heeded the drumbeat for war. New York Times editorialized, quote, it's not surprising that in the wake of September 11th, the president would want to make the world safer, and that one of his top priorities would be eliminating Iraq's ability to create biological, chemical, and nuclear weapons, end quote. Oh, my God. Briefed by Secretary of State Powell and other top advisors that Saddam had an active program to develop nuclear weapons, Congress also fell into line. Bush, dismissing pleas to allow U.N. weapons inspectors to complete their mission, launched the invasion to quickly depose Saddam on May 1st, 2003, standing beneath a banner on the deck of the USS Abraham Lincoln that read, Mission Accomplished, Bush declared major American combat activities completed. Yes, he did, didn't he? All right, Christian fundamentalists, there's a whole list of names of people that you should immediately drag into the public square and stone to death. What's the matter? Not going to do it? Don't you know what's going to happen if you don't? God is going to rip your heads off and throw them into hell where they'll be used as soccer balls in the Hades League. Huh? Come on, your sky spook demands it. It's in the writing. It's in the law. Don't you realize what these people have done? Ah, that's right. That's right. That's only for adulterers, fornicators, queers, sodomites. Right? Ah, the people really get out there and commit mass murder and death and destruction and lies and deceit and blasphemy. Plus, they didn't go to church on Sunday. Huh? Have no other gods before me. Isn't that what it says? What's the matter with you fundies? Come on. Go get them. The rest of us will just sit back and watch as you fulfill the dicta that are in your religious teachings. You've got to do it. You have no choice. Unless you want to burn in hell forever. You can do it anyway you want. Do it by the way. Love it all down in your mind.
that fish and humans can coexist peacefully. It's More of Mike Malloy.
And my arms are in the
open. It's about 25 before the hour.
In this harbor forest, I will wait until...
Not far from the Malloy compound up here in the mountains in North Georgia, there is a retreat center that occasionally models some of its programs after the Sedona Soul Adventures. Are you any of you familiar with that? Different weekend retreats to deal with internal turmoil. And so I'm going to sign up and take off for a week, say goodbye to my wife and child, and see if I can purge myself of this poisonous hatred that I feel for all things Republican, conservative, religious. And if it works, when we do the program Monday night, you'll notice a rejuvenated, changed Malloy. So we'll see what happens. What else we got here? Oh, yeah, the gun sales thing. Have you heard about that? Keeping in mind that white conservatives are probably the dumbest ass group of males, are the dumbest ass group of human beings ever to cluster in one place. I remember in 2000, the only reason Gore lost Tennessee and West Virginia, his home state in West Virginia, is because at the last minute, when Rove saw that Gore was going to be the next president, they flooded Tennessee and West Virginia with handbills and flyers and stuff that said there would be a huge gun grab, that the first thing that Al Gore was going to do, even though Al Gore was former member of the NRA, first thing he was going to do is grab all the guns. And the white, mouth-breathing, male hillbillies all went for it, as they always do, every single time. Every single time. These dumbasses go for it. The gun dealers love it. You know, the rest of the economy is in the toilet, but not gun sales. Because this time they said, well, I mean, take a look. It's Barack Obama. First of all, he's a Muslim. Second, he's an Arab terrorist. Third, he's a Negro. What do you think's going to happen? Quick, get some guns. God damn it, quick. So the white mouth-breathing knuckle-draggers have done it. They, I love this. This is all over the news, but where's this from? This is from the Associated Press, probably. Listen to this lead. When 10-year-old Austin Smith heard Barack Obama had been elected president, he had one question.
Does this mean I won't get a new gun for Christmas?
That brought his mother, the camouflage-clad Rachel Smith, to Bob Motes' sports shop on Thursday, where she was picking out that special 20-gauge shotgun, one of at least five weapons she plans to buy before Obama takes office in January. Like Smith, gun enthusiasts nationwide are stocking up on firearms out of fears that the combination of an Obama administration and a Democrat-dominated Congress will result in tough new gun laws. Mrs. Smith, who is 32, said,
you know, I think they're going to really try to crack down on guns and make it harder for people to try to purchase them.
She has taught all five of her children, ages 4 to 10, to shoot because, well, you know, our family relies on game for food. We shoot squirrels and rats and stuff, you know. And yet, the hillbillies in this country don't understand that the only time in modern history there's been a gun grab was in New Orleans a couple years ago after a hurricane, and the person who ordered it was a right-wing neo-Nazi Republican named George Bush, who sent his private thug army, Blackwater, into New Orleans to seize the guns. You dumb freaks.
Yeah, Mike, but you know Barack Obama, he's a terrorist, and he's a Negro.
As a U.S. senator, Barack Obama voted to leave gun makers and gun dealers open to lawsuits. Oh, no. You mean like insurance companies, pharmaceutical companies, car dealerships, car manufacturers, I should say? You mean he voted to just let gun manufacturers be open to product liability lawsuits, too? He did? Well, there you go. As an Illinois state legislator, he supported a ban on semi-automatic weapons. Oh, no. You mean that some bitch wanted to stop me from getting my AR-47 or my AK-47 or something where I could just hold the trigger and just keep and squeeze all 40 or 50 shots because you know I'm surrounded by engines. God damn it. I gotta defend my family. A gun grab. Barack Obama is, and you know, the insane part of this is it happens every time there's an election where it appears that a Democrat's going to win. And every single Democrat who has been president in the last 50 years has been a member of the NRA until it was taken over by crazy people. Oh, my God. And the only time there has been an official gun grab in this country is under a Republican. One Georgia gun shop advertised on an outdoor sign an Obama sale. But the owner took it down after people complained that the shop appeared to be issuing a call to violence against the country's first black leader. Yeah, damn. Not me. Nothing. Franklin Gun Shop outside of Nashville, Tennessee, sold more than 70 guns on Tuesday, making it the biggest sales day since the shop opened 8 years ago. Also on Tuesday, Guns and Gear in Cheyenne, Wyoming, set a one-day sales record. And then on Wednesday, they set another one. Stuart Wallen, owner of Get Some Guns in the Salt Lake City suburb of Murray, said he sold 9 assault weapons the day after Obama was elected. That same day, the gun store owner Cheaper Than Dirt in Fort Worth, Texas, sold $101,000 worth of merchandise, according to the owner, Dwayne Irwin. Oh, yeah, goddamn. Yeah, we did. We're selling all kind of guns, because you know why. Obama is he's a gun grabber. He is, and besides that, hell, he's a terrorist, man. God damn, ain't you been listening? He's a terrorist. He's an Arab. He's a Muslim. Probably queer. You know? And he's going to take our guns. So we got to stop him. Oh, plus, did you notice? He's a Negro, too. Damn. Man, come on. Come on, boys. We're on the sale here on hand grenades, too.
It's unlikely anyone will shoot me.
Oh, will he ever learn? No, he never will learn. With our fate, he's unconcerned. He'll abide forever by our right to bear Uzis. He's a man who never will learn. Georgie's fun-loving minions always greet him when he visits, and they give him a dollar or two. And because of all the loopholes they have given Georgie millions, it's insane, but sadly it's true. Oh, will he ever learn? No, he never will learn. With our fate, he's unconcerned. He will ride forever on the train of money. He's a man who never will learn.
Left out by right-wing talk radio? You found a home with Mike Malloy.
Come to your life. There's no turning back. Even while we sleep, we
about 12 before the hour. Hey, we're way ahead of the clock tonight, aren't we? Obama held his first press briefing today where he said he was going to seize all the guns, but only from white people. Black people get to keep theirs. And matter of fact, black folks will be issued AK-47s. Oh, you didn't see that part? Oh, okay. Anyway, he held his first press briefing today looking very presidential indeed and focused on the troubled economy. Wasn't that $7 trillion bailout that McCain was flapping about? So that's $700 billion bailout that McCain flapped about so much. Wasn't that supposed to make things better? Anyway, here's some, it sounds like hopeful talk from the soon-to-be president. I don't know. You listen, you decide.
This morning we woke up more sobering news about the state of our economy. The 240,000 jobs lost in October marks the 10th consecutive month that our economy has shed jobs. In total, we've lost nearly 1.2 million jobs this year, and more than 10 million Americans are now unemployed. Tens of millions of families are struggling to figure out how to pay the bills and stay in their homes. Their stories are an urgent reminder that we are facing the greatest economic challenge of our lifetime, and we're going to have to act swiftly to resolve it.
This is hopeful.
Immediately after I become president, I'm going to confront this economic crisis head on by taking all necessary steps to ease the credit crisis, help hardworking families, and restore growth and prosperity.
Well, I hope maybe one of the things that will be done will be to inject cash into the population by restructuring these home loans, dropping interest rates, starting over again if that's what the home buyers want, keeping people in their homes, Mr. President-elect. That seems to me to be more important than bailing out these corporate thugs who all of a sudden seem to be hovering in the background here of your press briefer today. I'm sorry, I just couldn't help that. You know, there's Larry Summers. There's over there is Robert Rubin. Over there is Paul Volcker. Oh, nothing to worry about. Nothing to worry about. So what are the elements of Obama's economic rescue plan? Hopefully we'll maybe have a president will focus on the middle class and small businesses instead of these big corporations. You think?
First of all, we need a rescue plan for the middle class that invests in immediate efforts to create jobs and provide relief to families that are watching their paychecks shrink and their life savings disappear. A particularly urgent priority is a further extension of unemployment insurance benefits for workers who cannot find work in the increasingly weak economy. A fiscal stimulus plan that will jumpstart economic growth is long overdue. I've talked about it throughout this, the last few months of the campaign. We should get it done. Second, we have to address the spreading impact of the financial crisis on the other sectors of our economy. Small businesses that are struggling to meet their payrolls and finance their holiday inventories, and state and municipal governments facing devastating budget cuts and tax increases. We must also remember that the financial crisis is increasingly global and requires a global response.
You know, and another thing that we ought to remember is that all of this came about with Republicans in control of everything. This is what the sons of bitches have done. This is what I was talking about at the beginning of the program. They've wrecked it. They have taken this economy in this country and just slammed it to the ground and then stomped on it. They hate America. They hate our system, our economic system. They hate our system of self-governance. Republicans need to be eliminated. They need to be removed. They truly, truly do. Now, if President Obama wants to create jobs, very simple, the model's there. It's the Roosevelt, Franklin. The infrastructure in this country is crumbling into dust. Another Works Project Administration under a different name, of course. But wait a minute, Mike. That'd be socialism, wouldn't it? No, I don't know. What is unemployment insurance? Isn't that socialism? What is welfare? Isn't that socialism? What is the military? Isn't that socialism? What's the bailout of Wall Street? Isn't that stop it. So a works project administration or an equivalent that would pump hundreds of billions, because that's what it's going to take, hundreds of billions of dollars back into the economy. You talk about small businesses, cement factories, road builders, bridge builders, school construction, electricians, plumbers. Oh, my God. Keep going, boy. Keep going. Dam builders, engineers. What else? Plumbers. On and on and on. All these people put back to work in the manufacturing sector, making the parts that are going to go into the reconstruction of the infrastructure of this country. On and on. Don't buy it from China. Don't buy it from India. Don't buy it from the North Mariana Islands. Buy it from Kentucky and Michigan and California and Georgia and Vermont. Set up the factories there. Pump billions, tens of billions, hundreds of billions, just like they're doing to these scum-stuck and rat bastards in Wall Street. Only do it where it's going to make a difference. And what will we wind up with? Working Americans, a rebuilt infrastructure, all this deferred maintenance that is going to collapse and continue to kill people, a rising tax base. Do it! Maybe somebody in the Obama administration, maybe they've already started talking about it. Jesus, Brock, all we have to do, the country needs the jobs. The small businesses need to start providing payrolls. There needs to be taxes generated. And the infrastructure is rotted from 40 years of being ignored. Here's the perfect opportunity. Or am I the only one who sees that? No, I mean, other than you, you see it. You know this. Are we the only two? You and me? Truth Seeker? Maybe I'm wrong. This doesn't seem hard. This doesn't seem difficult. The solution, part of the solution. This doesn't seem difficult at all. To hell with Wall Street. Let the miserable, snaky, wormy bastards collapse. That's what capitalism's all about, isn't it? Huh? Let them fall into the hole they've created. What is being destroyed if they disappear? Paper? The sucking off of all sorts of capital out of our system? What's being destroyed if all of these predatory bastards go down the commode? Tell me! That's right. Nothing. Nothing is being destroyed. Now, what's being created if we go to a WPA-style infusion of jobs, taxes, money into this economy? What's being constructed? Everything. People get their pride back. People get jobs. Hell, we need steel makers now. We're going to need iron workers. We're going to need people to know how to make glass. We're going to need all this kind of stuff. It's all going to be right there. Plus, in the meantime, then we can start on the green industries, right? If Barack Obama or anybody wants to save Detroit, save Detroit. Only save it the right way. Tell them to get rid of their goddamn internal combustion engine and do it right this time. Oh, my goodness, the possibilities here are endless, aren't they, Truth Seeker? It's just a whole row of possibilities. It's just endless off to the horizon. How many of these ideas do you think they're talking about in the soon-to-be Barack Obama administration? the hour. This is the Nova M Radio Network. My name is Mike Malloy. We were right in the middle before the break of listening to some of the sound bites from today's Barack Obama pre-presidential press briefing. What do they call it? A presser? I guess if you're in the business. I'm not in the business. A press briefing. So, Obama continues to explain, and this is the part that really got me. He talks in plain, measured terms and complete, coherent sentences. And the contrast, I mean, this is worth the price of omission, admission, just to see an articulate, intelligent human being who is going to be the president talking about complex issues or simple issues, but in this case, complex issues, being able to talk about them using proper grammatical construction, whole sentences, sometimes with compound subjects, and just doing it after 8 years of listening to this gibbering, ignorant George Bush. I could just sit back. My thing would be, all right, Barack Obama, go ahead, get your people doing whatever they have to do, but you just stand there and talk, okay? Because I'm going to spend the next 4 years just sitting back listening to someone speak clearly, correct sentences, with the proper indicated punctuation. What a relief this is.
Third, we will review the implementation of this administration's financial program to ensure that the government's efforts are achieving their central goal of stabilizing financial markets while protecting taxpayers, helping homeowners, and not unduly rewarding the management of financial firms that are receiving government assistance. It is absolutely critical that the Treasury work closely with the FDIC, HUD, and other government agencies to use the substantial authority that they already have to help families avoid foreclosure and stay in their homes. Finally, as we monitor and address these immediate economic challenges, we will be moving forward in laying out a set of policies that will grow our middle class and strengthen our economy in the long term. We cannot afford to wait on moving forward on the key priorities that I identified during the campaign, including clean energy, health care, education, and tax relief for middle class families.
Isn't that amazing? Sentences. And if you saw the press conference, he didn't have a teleprompter. He didn't have notes. Can you imagine McCain trying to answer these questions? In the first place, McCain would not be having a press briefing 96 hours after becoming the president-elect. McCain would not. He would be trying to figure out some way to get the chalice of poison into Palin's throat. He would be otherwise occupied. But when Barack Obama says we will be moving forward in laying out a set of policies that will grow our middle class and strengthen our economy in the long term, maybe he's referring to a WPA-style program of creating jobs, real jobs. I mean, it's one thing in a crisis to extend unemployment compensation. I remember the last time Kathy and I drew unemployment was when we were you were pregnant. It was after IE America, but before we got started with Air America, and you were 6 months pregnant.
That was so much fun. Can I tell a quick funny story?
Sure.
Only very quickly. I was 6 months pregnant, as Mike stated. Actually, I was 4 months, then 5 months, then 6 months pregnant during our unemployment compensation period. And I just kept getting larger and larger, going to the unemployment office as we had to do. I think it was every 3 weeks we had to take some kind of little class. And I'll never forget this. I'm sitting in a room of people, in order to keep getting our benefits, our $325 a week or whatever it was. I remember sitting in this class and them going around table by table, person by person. This was someone coaching us on interviewing skills. We're going to hone our interviewing skills. And the woman was all just really excited, and she kept pointing to people and saying, why do you think you aren't finding a job? Why are you not getting hired? What's going on with you that you're not getting hired? And I'm leaning back in my very pregnant coveralls with my giant belly pushed out, and I've got my fingers on my tummy, and I'm drumming my pregnant abdomen, and I'm saying, I have no idea. I walk in, and they look at me, and it's like they instantly there's something they sense about me that they just are put off by. And the woman says, well, what do you think it is? Do you think you're not dressing appropriately for the job? And I'm rubbing my abdomen at the time, and I'm saying, I wish I could put my finger on it, but it's just something. It's just, I guess I'm giving off some sort of aura that is telling employers not to hire me. I don't know what. Well, let's work on that. Let's pretend I'm your. And I thought, lady, can you not tell that no one's going to hire me because I'm about to, as Sarah would say, pop out of Palin? I was about to have a baby, and they're not going to put somebody on their staff who's going to be there
2 months.
A month.
Right.
Before I'm going on maternity. It was ridiculous.
Those were the good old days. Yeah, I could tell some stories about the seminars I had to attend also. Talk about interviewing skills. Oh, my God. But if Barack Obama is interested in doing what he says, moving forward, laying out a set of policies to grow a middle class, strengthen our economy, the WPA thing to me makes perfect sense. Extending unemployment benefits right now, it has to be done. Absolutely has to be done. That takes an act of Congress. I hope he can do it. Because I remember Kathy got $300 a week, I got $300 a week. And had we not had that money back then, we were rapidly depleting our savings, had we not had that $600 a week until finally Air America decided to hire us, I'm serious, I don't know what we would have done. But then that's because neither Kathy nor I planned our lives right. So we don't have, $1 million 401k package.
Well, we used to have some investments.
Well, we did. Yeah, we did. But those were all in emerging markets, and look what happened to that. But if Obama is serious, he says, we cannot afford to wait on moving forward on the key priorities I identified during the campaign: clean energy, health care, education, tax relief for middle-class families. We're going to find out fairly quickly, because obviously Barack Obama is not your typical politician. He is not your typical presidential nominee. Think back over the last group of them. So there is hope. Let's try not. I've told myself today, don't be blinded by the Rahm Emanuel thing. Don't be blinded by the Rahm Emanuel thing. Don't be upset because you see Robert Rubin standing there. Don't be upset because somehow they've reanimated Paul Volcker. Just take it. Don't worry because Larry Summers is floating around there like a goddamn vulture around a corpse. Just take a deep breath, Malloy. Take a deep breath. So I'm hoping against hope that and John Corzine, former, he's current governor of New Jersey, isn't he? Governor of New Jersey, right? Yeah. Corzine, who used to be on the board of Lehman Brothers? No, it wasn't Lehman Brothers, it was the other one. The one that's, what's the other big one? Oh, Jesus, I'm going to hit 20 emails now. It's okay. Don't tell me. But John Corzine, who should just stay where he is, be the governor of New Jersey and try not to drive fast. But maybe Barack Obama can put this together. That's a hope, right?
Nobody ever loved me like she does. Oh, she does. And if somebody loved me like she do me, ooh, she do me, yes she does.
Don't let me down.
Talk Radio right. From the left, it's more of Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. From Obama's closing remarks today, he's not pretending to have a magic wand to erase what this filthy Bush crime family and these disgusting Republicans have done in the past 8 years. But he does offer the best possible plan, in his opinion, to restore our economy. Also to protect homeowners and small businesses and stop this unregulated corporate raiding and raping that was allowed to flourish in almost ancient Roman proportions by Bush and Cheney.
Let me close by saying this. I do not underestimate the enormity of the task that lies ahead. We have taken some major action to date, and we will need further action during this transition and subsequent months. Some of the choices that we make are going to be difficult. And I have said before, and I will repeat again, it is not going to be quick, and it is not going to be easy for us to dig ourselves out of the hole that we are in. But America is a strong and resilient country. And I know we will succeed if we put aside partisanship and politics and work together as one nation. That's what I intend to do.
Well, that's great, President-elect Obama, and best of luck, and I certainly will support in my little tiny quarter inch of the universe your ideas. But Republicans can't put aside partisanship in politics. They have to be eliminated. You have to stomp on them. Maybe that's a good reason that Rahm Emanuel was selected by you. Maybe that's the only reason, because Rahm Emanuel, and some people say he's a Likudnik, some say he's not. We know that his father was part of a terrorist organization, Irgun, that blew up British, worked to blow up the British, the Hotel David, in order to get the British to leave Palestine. But, you know, the sins of the father, yada, yada, yada. Maybe Rahm Emanuel is exactly the person that you need to body slam these stinking corpses, the ones personified by creeps like John Boehner, who from Ohio, the Republican minority leader, who made some kind of a snarky comment the other day about what's about to happen to his filthy dead party. And not to suggest that Brock is a wimp either. Remember when Lieberman made some kind of a snotty remark about him during the campaign? Was it during the campaign? And the next day, this was caught on C-SPAN, Barack Obama got Lieberman up against a wall. I thought he was going to kick his pasty white ass right into the ground. But when he realized the camera was on him, he kind of backed off. So, you know, look. I've said this before, and I'll say it again. There's only one way to fight fire, and that's with more fire. A. B. You don't bring your fist to a knife fight. You bring a goddamn gun. The Republicans are dying. It is a twitching, violent corpse, and it's like the old horror movies. The corpse is lying in a freshly dug grave, and it's reaching out, trying to grab people and pull them into the grave with it. The Republican Party is comprised of useless individuals. People like, I just got an email here. People like Bill Kristol and Sean Hannity and Karl Rove and Dick Morris and Rush Limbaugh and Bill O'Reilly and Ann Coulter and Brent Bozell and Frank Luntz and Matt Drudge and, what's her name? Pat Buchanan. William Bennett, Glenn Beck, Laura Ingram, Dennis Miller, and of course Joe Lieberman. These people, they truly need to be sent away somewhere. Go away. You've had your chance. You tried to destroy the country. The country is still alive. As a matter of fact, the country has declared you, vermin, irrelevant. So it's time to just go away. Go away. Get away from us normal people and take all those filthy red states with you. We don't give a damn about them. We really don't. Of course, we understand there's a lot of people in those red states who voted blue, but you know what I'm saying. You know what I'm saying. I just hope Barack Obama doesn't really believe his statement. I know we'll succeed if we put aside partisanship and politics and work together as one nation. President-elect Obama, that is your dream. That is my dream. That is every rational human being's dream. But you see, you're expecting Republicans, conservatives, right-wing, dominionist, Christian freaks to go along with that? Watch your back.
So much money. Could somebody please help out my family? My mom needs hearing aids, new shoulders and new legs. My dad needs a break, he works all day every day. My brother needs a place and a job where he can make enough money to take care of his baby.
Mention yet tonight how much he hates these people? It's more of Mike Malloy.
I'm gonna leave the city, got to get away. All this fussing and fighting, man, you know.
I wonder if this is gonna be like a lobotomy. This crash course on how to dump one's rage. 25 before the hour. All right, Dana Bash, CNN. This is from a couple of days ago. This is from Wednesday. But it, since I was out Thursday, I want to play this for you. Dana Bash and her CNN crew ran into Sarah Palin at the hotel bar before she flew back to Alaska. Now, since she's been back, in Alaska, of course, there's a whole new set of sound bites coming from the Ho that are just astonishing. And the old pimp, his crew, has been anonymously, which demonstrates clearly their cowardice. The old pimp's crew has been anonymously releasing all sorts of statements about what a she-devil the hoe was. And I mean, this is just amazing to watch. This is just astonishing. I think this is unique in American presidential political history, presidential campaign history, where when it's over, the presidential candidate's crew starts releasing anonymous vitriolic, poisonous statements against, in this case, the hoe from Wasilla. The hoe is caught. She doesn't know what the hell to do, so she starts responding the only way she knows how, the one who thinks that Africa is a country. It's unbelievable. Now, it's getting so sick that it's kind of forced me to stop watching Morning Joe. I used to, I like to watch Morning Joe, this right-wing nutball on MSNBC in the morning, because, you know, he is Joe Scarborough. He usually assembles an interesting cast and crew. But I've watched Mika Brzezinski, I've said this before, go from being, in a very short period of time, 8 months maybe, go from being a kind of an independent, ballsy newscaster into being a battered wife. Joe Scarborough just beats the living hell out of her every morning, and she just sits there and takes it. I'm waiting for the morning on live television when she reaches into her purse, pulls out an ice pick, and very quickly inserts it between his third and fourth rib, pulls it out, and puts the ice pick back in her back in her handbag, and Scarborough sits there, and for a moment he blinks his eyes, and all of a sudden he looks down, and he can't figure out what's happening as he keels over into a pool of blood. But in the meantime, I watch Mika Brzezinski has turned into a complete apologist for Sarah Palin, I think, unless she's got a subtext that I'm missing. But she seems to be defending her against these attacks. Maybe it's the woman thing. Is it woman power thing? Is it don't attack this woman or you're attacking me? Is that what it is? Okay. But Mika Brzezinski, who is on thin ice to begin with the abusive Joe Scarborough, now finds herself defending Sarah Palin against the attacks by these anonymous vampires inside the McCain camp. And it's kind of weird to see. That's all now. This is from 2 days ago. Dana Bash catches up to Sarah Palin.
And now that this is over, when you think back and you hear words like diva or going rogue that we were told about, frankly, because of some tension between you and some of the people who John McCain worked for, some of the people who helped get you on the ticket. What can you tell us a little bit more now that this is over about some of the tension?
Well, I still, it is absolutely false that there's been any tension, certainly from my part or my family's part, and in fact, my family who's surrounding me here, they know me, they know my values, what I stand for, they know my work ethic, they know that certainly there is absolutely no diva in me. In fact, we laugh about that criticism, and if only people, come on up and travel with us to Alaska and see this diva lifestyle that I supposedly live or would demand, because it's just false. But again, I'm not going to participate in any of the negativity. Some people may choose to go there, but it will be based on false allegations if that is a criticism that ever there were demands on my part or my family or my supporters' parts that were unreasonable or would hurt the campaign. It's false.
Well, no, it's not false, Sarah. It's just that you weren't cued in. See, Sarah really does think that the witch doctor and she and the white boy all standing around inside that church praying for divine guidance because Sarah Palin has a divine mission. I think Sarah believes that really happened, that there was some sort of a intervention by the cosmic muffin to elevate her to the position of temporary vice president of the United States, and then as soon as McCain keeled over, his body devoured by cancer cells, then she would be president and could lead us all to Armageddon. I think she really believed that. She really did believe that. So it is difficult for Ms. Palin to believe that there might have been some real hardcore, hard-ass political operatives inside the McCain camp who didn't like the fact that Sarah Palin was pumped down his throat and have been rebelling ever since that nasty-ass day 8 or 9 weeks ago when the Christian right called John up and said, John, we'll support you on one condition. You got to take the governor of Alaska. And then they never vetted her. They never asked her questions. Can you imagine someone asking the governor of one of the 50 states, Governor, is Africa a country or a continent? No, I can't either. Governor, can you name the three countries involved in the North American Free Trade Agreement? No, I can't either. But that was the situation with the hoe from Wasilla. She had no working knowledge of anything. The only reason she's the governor of Alaska is because it's way far away. The entire political structure of the state, where it concerns the Republicans and some of the Democrats, is just corrupt and worm-eaten. So, all of a sudden, Sarah Palin is realizing that the other half of her team did not feel sent by the Lord Jesus Christ in order to bring about, the rapture. The other part of her team actually thought that they were going to kick ass, take names, be political, deal in the dirt and the drudge of winning a political campaign, not for the greater glory of Jesus H. Christ, but for the greater glory of right-wing neo-fascist Republicanism. So there was definitely a kind of a conflict, don't you think, within the two camps of Sarah Palin and John McCain. And now that it's over, the most ridiculous campaign ever run in American political history. Oh, yeah, they got 47, 48 million votes? Sure. That doesn't speak to the professionalism of the campaign run by McCain and Palin. It speaks to the idiocy of our fellow Americans. That's all that is. That's all. It's just, you know, blah, 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 that sort of thing. But there were political operatives, really hardcore political operatives inside the McCain camp. I don't mean the ones sucked in there by Karl Rove, because they're the ones who brought Sarah Palin on. Sarah Palin was going to glom up the Hillary Clinton vote. Yeah, okay. But hardcore political operatives inside the McCain camp who really wanted to win this election. They really, really, really did. And all of a sudden, they've got what? He did what? He picked whom? He what? Sarah who? Oh, my God! No! No! And that's what they had to work with. So the voices coming, the anonymous voices, of course they're anonymous. Of course they're anonymous. You know, most political operatives are worms, sneaks, rats, cockroaches, and sneaks. I mean, come on, let's face it. It's a filthy business. Absolutely filthy. Maybe it'll change, but for the past 40 years it's been filthy. Look at the kind of campaigns that have been run by the Republicans. By the Republicans. Look at it. Garbage. Junk. Vomit. So Sarah now is all, what? They're saying what about me? Oh, my God, none of that's true. Honey, it's all true. Every single word they're saying is true. If you were caught up in the illusion that Jesus was whispering in your ear and that the witch doctor was protecting you from haints and spirits and all kinds of ugliness, okay. But the truth is, Sarah, there were no witches trying to get you. There were no haints hovering around you. You didn't have to tie up your hair in braids. All you had to do was, when you were asked by John McCain to be his partner, just say, no, because I don't have any idea. Oh, wait, you did say that, didn't you? I don't know what a vice president does. But it was one hell of a shopping spree, wasn't it? Huh, Gov? Hot damn! Well, you and the mister can get back to them snow machines now, sweetheart.
I've got you on the loose. I left you grooving. I've got you on the beat. I left you broken. But won't you take my place as long ago I wandered way out on the cliff with the brilliance of an angel. So blind me.
Before the hour. Thanks to our crew, our engineer and co-producer, Ian Huff, or associate producer, I should say, Ben Birch, who is our podcast manager and the technical advisor for this entire network, Sharon Gordy, our military affairs correspondent, the ethical advisors for the Molloy program are Bob Alexander and Bridget Wolf. And our economic advisor is Bruce Enberg. The executive producer is Catherine Bay. Don't forget, this Sunday, Ian Huff hosts Unreported News on KPHX. You can get to it by, if you don't live in Phoenix, by streaming KPHX 1480 and KNUV 1190. this Sunday, 8 a.m. Phoenix time, which would be, what, 10 a.m. Eastern time? Hell, I don't know.
I don't know. They're weird out there. They don't change their clocks or something.
Yeah, they don't. Bridget writes in, regarding the Sarah Palin leaks, all this stuff, Tom Hartman's theory is that the anonymous comments are coming from Romney, Mitt Romney loyalists inside the McCain campaign, who are determined to knock out the only threat they see to the Mitster being the nominee in 2012. After all, the Mormons also believe in the apocalypse, but to bring their Jesus back, there has to be a Mormon as president of the United States. Oh, my God. Oh. Email here from Kathy in Green Bay, Wisconsin writes, I have no illusions about them, the Obama administration, nor do I have high expectations. Bill Clinton saw to that. However, I'm willing to give Obama and whomever he chooses a chance. His first economic speech wasn't too bad. As for Rahm Emanuel, I hear he takes names and kicks ass. I don't have any particular objection to that. He's DLC. I'm not fond of that. The put-aside partisanship crap concerns me. I wrote to you using the same kind of language back when you were at IE America. 6 months later, by the time you got to Air America, I changed my mind. I'd analyzed it more, but I really think it was as simple as this for me. Reality set in! I keep thinking that Obama is simply too nice to go far. Fortunately, I continue to be proven wrong. Now that you mention that little incident with Lieberman, I do recall that Obama was forceful. I stay sane by reining in my expectations. P.S. I hope Obama has something to say about Lieberman's fate and that Lieberman doesn't see it coming and never feels a thing. God. The female of the species is more deadly than the male. Who said that? The poet Kipling? Was that Kipling? I think it was Rudyard Kipling. We did not cover 80% of what I wanted to cover tonight. The Bush crime family is working feverishly to upend as many regulations still in force as they can and to destroy, especially where it concerns the environment. We'll get to this Monday. That's assuming that I come back from this weekend intensive, still interested. I may come back just asking everyone to chant with me on the air to focus on the... that great vast emptiness right behind your eyes. That was it. Ram Dass talked about that. No, it wasn't he. It was someone else. You know, that huge, infinite emptiness that exists right behind your eyes. Close your eyes now. See that? Whew, be careful. So we may do that on the program Monday night. We'll just I'll get some finger symbols. I used to live right around the corner from the Hare Krishna temple here in Atlanta, or in Atlanta, back in the day, back in the mid-70s. And every Sunday they had a free dinner for anyone who wanted to show up. And I used to love the food, except I just got tired of seeing the fingerprints, you know, in the little squares of sesame seed stuff. You know, you see a thumbprint and go, I wonder if that person washed their hands. But I'm sorry, that's just the way I am. But we would, as many as could fit in, would fit into the main room of the temple, and the entertainment would be chanting and with the finger symbols, the Hare Krishna, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Krishna Krishna. You know, that, which is really nice. It really does clear your head. If you do it enough, it will clear your head. I miss the Hare Krishnas. You know, here in Atlanta, back in the day, you couldn't walk 10 feet without coming across a group of Hare Krishna people chanting. And with the ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch. Remember that, Kathy? Hare, Hare Rama.
Hasn't been that long since they were, floating around the airport.
Rama, Rama. Yeah, well, then they passed ordinances that you know, the Hare Krishna people couldn't go in the airport. Anybody, even the Scientologists, the Moonies, nobody could go in the airport and start. The Moonies were kind of interesting, but I just hated their white shirts. I just hated them. The Krishnas, the Hare Krishna people, with their saffron robes and Now, granted, a lot of them had some pretty intense body odor, but, you know, they would carry those little sachets of patchouli and stuff around their necks, so it'd be kind of cool. But I miss that. Maybe I'll come back from this weekend, and we'll start the program Monday night. If we start out Monday night with a Krishna chant, you'll know that whatever psychic surgery that was done over this weekend will have taken. If we come back, if you tune into this program Monday night and you hear the usual show opening music, you know, a bastardized version of the of Pink Floyd, you'll know that it just didn't work. So, not that anybody cares. I'm just saying, you know, I mean, nobody cares. The only people that might care about this is me. That's all. I'm just saying, if you tune in and hear this, it'll mean that. If you hear that, it'll mean this. That's all. Have a great weekend, whatever you're going to do. Huh? I wonder if they still smoke dope at these kinds of things. That would be fun. I'll see you Monday night. Maybe. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
Have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are.
I'm going.